From now on, you will speak only when spoken to.
The following program, Normal Show Live, is intended for responsible adults only. We advocate for the repeal of marijuana prohibition for adults. We discuss the science, culture, and controversy about America's marijuana laws. We do not advocate or encourage any illegal activity and advise all listeners to learn their state and federal marijuana laws by visiting normal.org, N-O-R-M-L.org. Opinions and claims made by guests and advertisers of Normal Show Live are their own and do not necessarily reflect the philosophy and policies of Normal. Listener discretion is advised.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it,
and it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
From the promise of legalization.
And I think we need to rethink and decriminalize our marijuana laws.
To the agony of prohibition.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
The National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws presents Normal Show Live, Marijuana Nation. Now, here's your host, Normal's Outreach Coordinator.
Good day, tokers and tokettes, and welcome. It is Wednesday, January 18th, 2012, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. Thanks for joining us on this Hemp Day Hump Day. We have got a great show planned for you today, and it all begins with our introduction from the snowy virtual studios in beautiful Grass, Astoria, Oregon, the lovely Cannabis Carrie. Hi, Carrie.
Hi, Russ. Happy hump day.
Is it still snowy up there, or did it wash away?
You know, snow and then rain, mostly rain.
I know. Here in the valley in Portland, I know people that are living in states where you get real snow, it would just crack you up. I mean, the slightest flake comes down, and it's Snowpocalypse 2012, which, as of right now, has turned into Slushpocalypse 2012.
Right. Well, I would say in Portland, maybe in some parts of Portland, but out here on the coast, a little bit of snow is pretty crazy because we have such steep hills here.
That's true.
Like 2 days ago when it snowed, it was hilarious because there was just cars all parked at the bottom of hills, people trying to walk home because they literally couldn't get their cars home.
Yeah, yeah. It's a lot like San Francisco out there in Astoria. You get those
Absolutely.
Really steep, steep hills there.
But with snow.
With snow. And Wiz Calico and Ganja John are on their way in, so we'll be talking to them later. But first, we get our hemp headlines with Cannabis Carrie. So what do we have in the news today?
Well, today we're going to talk a lot about dispensaries. There's so much going on. There's crackdowns in the on the West Coast. There's dispensary regulation also on the West Coast that's up. Plus, we're looking at that program in Washington, D.C. and what they have decided about dispensaries. And then also I want to report to you on a two bus that came out of the border today that I thought were just, I don't know, fun news. We'll get to all that today.
All right, great. We'll look at that right after this first break. And then after that, at our 20 after, it's Irie Wednesday. So we get to our daily Toker Tunes, and NorCal Perps will be giving us a call from the Bay Area. He's got a new song from Pepper that we're going to be enjoying today. And then at half past, you've all been waiting for it, it's Dr. Mitch Earlywine in our Cannabis Science segment. If you've got a question about the science, health, history, or culture of marijuana and its users, you need to call in. It's 971-533-7111 at the bottom of the hour, or you can join our chat room at Ustream and get your questions in, and believe me, he will have the answer, or he'll have it for you next week, either way. Also on today's show, we're debuting a new segment that I'm really excited about called Anonymous Cop. There is an on-duty, active-duty veteran police officer who is hooked up with law enforcement against prohibition, and he's publishing his views as a blog on their website, and I've been given permission to read those blog posts so we can know what cops really think about the drug war, but they might be a little too afraid to speak out about that. All that in Toker Talk Radio coming up next.
You're listening to Normal Show Live, the voice of the marijuana nation.
Weedmaps.com. I'm Radical Russ from Normal. In my job as outreach coordinator, I travel every month, and when I'm on the road, I need a fast, accurate way to find the medical marijuana dispensaries in the area. So I turn to Weedmaps.com. Weedmaps.com has the best dispensary locator online or on your mobile device. Search by zip code or let Weedmaps find you, and in seconds you'll have the addresses, phone numbers, and customer service reviews for the medical marijuana dispensaries in the local area. WeedMaps.com also has a section devoted to helping you find a doctor who understands and recommends medical marijuana under your state's law. You can even check prices on the Medical Marijuana Stock Exchange. Coming soon, you'll even be able to find the listings of normal attorneys and chapters, local head shops and grow shops, and the best weed-friendly businesses. WeedMaps.com has the information you need to be an informed cannabis consumer. Visit WeedMaps.com today, a proud sponsor of the Normal Network.
Aloha, this is Zion Thompson from The Green, and you're listening to Normal Show Live.
Hi, I'm Radical Russ. One of the best things about marijuana is the wonderful aroma. But when you travel a lot like I do, that aroma becomes a suspicious smell. That's why I endorse stealth-products.com, the leaders in smell-proof containers. From smell-proof vacuum bags to smell-proof backpacks and duffel bags, all the way to smell-proof digital safes, stealth-products.com has you covered. Stealth-products.com brings you safe, secure, odorless layers of protection with activated carbon fiber. Backpacks and duffel bags are simple black so as not to attract attention with a logo or a flashy design. Now, nothing is perfectly odor-controlled from the detection of drug dogs, but with proper vigilance, containers from stealth-products.com will help you avoid nosy humans.
You're now listening to Elliot Beats.
Stealth-products.com. Stealth-products.com.
Medical marijuana, industrial hemp, consumer cannabis. It's time for this week's Normal News with Cannabis Carrie.
The federal assault on medical marijuana dispensaries is heating up in Colorado and reigniting in long-embattled Los Angeles, California as well. L.A. City Hall is trying to ban medical marijuana dispensaries outright, and they are getting some help by the U.S. Attorney's Office. Three dispensary operators in Long Beach were convicted for selling marijuana last week, and those Southern California dispensaries that have been targeted are now going to lose all their property and asset forfeiture. According to a statement out today for the U.S. Attorney's Office, they will take everything that belongs to targeted dispensaries in Orange and L.A. counties. Federal and state agents executed search warrants on three different medical marijuana dispensaries yesterday, and that led to a search of two separate marijuana growing operations, each with more than 500 plants. Letters from the U.S. attorneys are still being sent out to some dispensaries and the property owners where the dispensaries operate, warning them that they need to take the steps to stop the sale and distribution of cannabis at their stores or face all the penalties that can incur at the hands of the federal government that doesn't see marijuana as either a medicine or a legal substance. Several dispensary owners in Southern California that ignored the warning letters last year now have court dates on the docket for 2012. And things don't look like they will get any easier for medical marijuana dispensaries in L.A. L.A. Councilman Jose Huzar is working to get all medical marijuana dispensaries within city limits to close their doors, a proposal he made to the council last month, and one that is gaining traction as the proposal got most of the details hashed out by the city council's Public Safety Committee in a closed-door session last Friday with the U.S. attorneys for Southern California. The L.A. City Council has had a long-standing fight with dispensaries in the City of Angels. Since 2007, they have been working on regulations or outright bans, so far unsuccessfully. But now, with the help of the threatening letters from the feds and the pressure on landowners, dozens of dispensaries have closed their door. The city tried to cap the number of dispensaries in L.A. at 100 and moved to do that based on a lottery system, but a California appeals court told them that they couldn't legally have a lottery system to choose business licenses. So many unlicensed shops have sprung up in the meantime. While the city has tried to find a way to regulate the medical marijuana market and the number of dispensaries in L.A.'s have gone up instead of down, it seems that the council is now more open to an outright ban than ever. Dispensaries in L.A. have heard this kind of talk before, and they all operate on the idea that there may be legal battles before them, but with this new round of cooperation between the city's attorney office and the city council, many are understandably nervous. The ban proposal is now headed to the city planning committee for a hearing on January 26th and could face a vote soon after that. Jane Usher, a special assistant city attorney, said that they are working towards what they are calling a gentle ban that would allow primary caregivers to grow medical marijuana but not sell it in any kind of retail environment.
Okay. It's just so perplexing, the administration's take on medical marijuana. They say time and time again, we don't want to, you know, do anything to hurt patients, people that are legitimately following the law, that are trying to ease their suffering or debilitation through the use of medical cannabis as it has been prescribed by state law, unless people are actually able to get it, right? Because if there's actually a place where they can go and get the medicine, that's where there seems to be a problem. So long as it's this abstract thing where people are supposedly growing plants in their closet or, I don't know, maybe getting a delivery from the weed fairy, that's how sick people are supposed to be treated here. We can't possibly have a business that caters to them. And in many cases, these are cooperatives or collectives that are working together, having to go through many more restrictions than any other business, certainly any pharmacy or liquor store has to go through. And yet this seems to be a problem for the administration. And I'll tell you what the problem really is. The problem really is economic clout, capital, political power. That's what they don't want to see developing in the medical marijuana industry. They don't want to see any competition to their big money campaign donors in big pharmaceutical industries out there. You certainly don't want to see the campaign cash dry up from Pfizer and Merck and Bristol-Myers Squibb and Eli Lilly that flows to both sides of the aisle, Democrats and Republicans alike, and that is the main reason they are having to crack down so much on the LA and other dispensary operations.
Much like New Jersey, Washington, D.C. also passed a medical marijuana law, but is having challenges to put the program into place. Yesterday, the D.C. City Council approved some emergency legislation to restrict how much marijuana for medical use will be allowed in each of the city's 8 wards. The council was getting pressure from Northeast residents who feared that Ward 5 would have the concentration of large indoor marijuana growing operations. After some public debate in the meeting last night, the council decided to put a cap on the number of cultivation centers that would be allowed in any one ward up to 6. Those cultivation centers would be allowed to grow up to 95 plants each, and only 10 cultivation centers will be allowed to be open citywide. So a very restrictive source of medical marijuana just to begin with. They will not be allowed to be within 300 feet of a school or a recreation center, and the Office of Zoning has now added that they will only be allowed in areas that are designed for light manufacturing. It is these restrictions that are driving applicants to want to base growing operations in the city's 5th ward, historically the center of the city's industrial base. So far, the city has received 28 applications for a medical marijuana cultivation center, and out of those, 26 of the applicants want to establish a business in Ward 5. So far, 7 of those have gotten a favorable recommendation from the Department of Health, and it just so happens that 6 of those are in Ward 5. That area of the city has seen a recent boom in adult entertainment businesses and even a waste transfer station, and to the residents, they say they're sick of being a dumping ground because of the zoning issues in all the other parts of the city. Ward 5 activists were at the meeting and supported the emergency legislation. More restrictive measures were voted down in the meeting when one council member finally stood up and said that these layers and layers of restriction would make medical marijuana too difficult to obtain. One compromise that was voted on in the final minutes of the meeting last night was to dictate that only one medical marijuana distribution center could exist in any ward that had more than 5 cultivation centers, a compromise with the Ward 5 neighborhood advisory members, although they said they wanted none. Medical providers say the neighborhood's concerns are overblown and will find that they are not the same kind of businesses as strip clubs and liquor stores. But as Washington, D.C. moves slowly and cautiously forward to implement their program, it was actually voted on back in 1998 and enacted in May of 2010. Some wonder if any distribution or cultivation centers will ever open in the federal government's backyard. It seems that dispensaries and cultivation centers have been trying the patience of the feds lately as they crack down in medical marijuana states like Colorado and California. It will be interesting to see how they treat dispensaries operating just a short bus trip away from the DEA headquarters.
Yeah, we'll see that when pigs fly, I'll tell you. The city council can debate this all they want, but of course, D.C. is a federal district, and ultimately the control of it comes down to Congress. And you really think congressmen want to have a dispensary shop somewhere in Washington, D.C., where they and their colleagues can see that, hey, gee, we have dispensaries, and nothing bad happens, and they revitalize the economy in the local area, and people have jobs, and it doesn't lead to more crime. And that would just make all of their drug war scare stories moot when they go back to South Dakota or Tennessee or West Virginia or wherever. So they can't have that. Furthermore, they're talking about allowing, 6 cultivation centers per ward. There's 8 wards. That's 48 cultivation centers, each one allowed to have 95 plants. That would be 4,560 legal marijuana plants in Washington, D.C. No, I can't see our Congress letting that one stand. But let's talk about the neighbors, this little NIMBYism, not in my backyardism, that's going on here. Wow, they got adult centers and a trash distribution place and pot dispensaries. Oh, no. Come on, man. You're comparing pot dispensaries to strip clubs, liquor stores, trashery. You have no idea what it is you're talking about. The dispensaries I have been to have been wonderful operations, have been great places that revitalize their neighborhoods, pay taxes, provide jobs, and they take the weed dealing that apparently you don't like, you know, out in parks and the streets and so on, and they bring it indoors where IDs are checked and there's security and there's some level of testing and purity of what's being sold here. I really wish Washington, D.C. would just finally live up to the votes of 69% of their residents and enact this program already.
And just for clarification, they are only allowing 10 cultivation centers citywide. 10 is the cap of that. So only 10.
It's
just
no
six
more
in any
than
given.
Six.
Yeah, no more than six. So only 950 legal plants for that huge city.
Oh, well, then I'm sure the DEA will be fine with it then.
Sure. Okay, moving on here. We do have a story about a large cannabis bust that caught my eye today. This one comes from Brownsville, Texas, and it was executed by the Customs and Border Protection Agency. And what must have taken untold hours to conceal. I can't even imagine this. Agents found more than 3,500 pounds of marijuana concealed in cabbage. No, the marijuana wasn't just hidden in a truck full of cabbage. The marijuana was actually wrapped into ball shapes, then wrapped on the outside with actual cabbage leaves to make it look like they were innocent cabbage heads coming from Mexico and headed to a salad bar near you. The cabbage-looking marijuana globes were being transported in a refrigerated truck to help keep up the charade. Now, all in all, there were 1,378 cannabis balls weighing in at 3,663 pounds of marijuana total. And in another enterprising bust today down in Texas, a state trooper pulled over an AT&T service truck for speeding 72 miles an hour in a 60-mile-an-hour zone. The troopers were suspicious when the driver just suddenly bailed and started running on foot. He was caught after a short chase. Authorities found 190 bundles of marijuana inside that AT&T truck weighing at 2,168 pounds. Although the truck looked like an authentic AT&T service vehicle, it was a clone, just a paint job to conceal its contents. Authorities say this isn't the first time they have come across a cloned work truck. They've also made a bust on a fake Halliburton vehicle and a fake FedEx van.
Hey, John, Calico, man, you want to get some cabbage, man? You smoke some cabbage. That's amazing, man. Wrapping it up in cabbage. There's some people with some free time. It just shows you, you know, how much profit there is to be made in smuggling here. That people will go to any lengths. You cannot stop it from coming across the border. It's just always going to happen. All right, folks, I got one here before we call this one a day from the Stupid Stoner Story Vaults. But this one, it might be unfair to call a stupid stoner story. I think this is more an unlucky stoner story. This is from the Morning Call in Lehigh Valley, Pennsylvania. Woman arrested twice in one day on marijuana and theft charges. A Monroe County woman was charged twice in one day by police after allegedly getting caught with marijuana when a police officer showed up unexpectedly at an office and then failing to pay for the taxi ride home from the police station. Tasha McMurray, age 24, of Tobyhanna, was taken into custody Saturday by Pocono Mountain Regional Police Department when an officer who detected an odor of marijuana on her while they were in the administration building of a Pocono County Place residential development. McMurray was waiting in the office to register, and the police officer arrived to serve a subpoena on a security officer who's scheduled to testify in court, according to a news release from police. Police said McMurray removed a large bag of marijuana from her underwear and tried to hide it in a decorative plant in the office when the police officer showed up. She was taken into custody on possession of drug charges and released after being processed at the police station. She called Mountain Taxi for a ride home to her home, on Tamara Terrace, but police said she had no money to pay the fare. As a result, police had contact with McMurray for a second time Saturday and cited her for theft of services. Yeah, that's not stupid. That's just dumb luck. That's a real bummer. You're going to get a new home. You're going to register at this new place. You're sitting in the office waiting to register when a cop shows up, not for you, but for some other guy who's got to testify, smells the weed on you. You try to hide it in the plant. Here's a tip. Keep the weed on your person. Keep the weed on your person. You know, if you feel you're going to get busted, this is what we can learn from this. If you feel you're going to get busted, keep the weed on your person. You're trying to ditch it, is another possible charge that can be brought up against you, and it's very hard to get away with it. When it's on your person, you've got your Fourth Amendment. You can refuse a search without a warrant. Now, that doesn't mean you're necessarily going to get away with it, but it does mean you've raised the constitutional bar that that cop has to jump over before they can harass you. They got to have the probable cause. Now, you might say, hey, well, I smell weed. You say, officer, I do not consent to any searches. You know, he can pat you down, he can frisk you and so on, but he can't force you to take that out of your pocket. Keep it in your pocket. You're no worse busted by asserting your rights than if you make it easy for the cop and just give up. Know your rights.
What do you think about a break, Russ?
I think it's a perfect time for a break. How you doing?
I'm doing good. How about you?
Getting better?
I'm doing a lot better.
All right. We'll take a break. We'll be even better when we get back.
It's 20 after the hour, and we have to take a short break, if you know what I mean. Please support these sponsors who support Normal Show Live.
Oh, have you ever met that funny reefer man? A reefer man. Have you ever met that funny reefer man? Reefer man. If he said he swam to China, he would sell you South Carolina. Then you know you're talking to that reefer man.
Shotty Slim, a.k.a., I don't know what I'm talking about, man. The contact in here is crazy.
Breathe in the air. Don't be afraid to care. Leave, but don't leave me.
This rainy day woman is the bomb. You guys don't know what you're missing.
Well, you know, you could share some of that with us, Randy.
No, Nelson, that's illegal. I can smoke this because I have cancer.
Come on, just give us a little bit.
Yeah.
Get your own medicinal marijuana cards. You've all got perfectly good microwaves at home. Look, I'm telling you guys, it's awesome. I can have all the pot I want, I get around faster than walking, and wherever I need a seat, I can just sit on my balls.
It's time for your daily Toker Tunes. The best in 420 friendly music from all genres that uplifts, entertains, and informs the public. Today we get tunes for Irie Wednesday, our celebration of that mellow vibe we find in the best of reggae, ska, calypso, and Latin music. If you'd like to submit your song to be played on Normal Show Live, send it to us at stash@normal.org. Now here's some more great independent marijuana music for today's Daily Toker Tune.
All right, we head down to the Bay Area where they are preparing for the NFC Championship game. And NorCal Purps is on the line. How you doing, Kyle?
I'm doing great, Russ. How you doing today?
I'm doing fantastic. Feeling Irie, hanging out with Ganja John, Wiz Khalifa, and Cannabis Carey, and looking forward to some Irie Wednesday music. So what's up with you lately?
Not much, you know. Had a nice little gathering with the family on Saturday, watching that amazing victory. You know, I was actually kind of hoping they would go out to Green Bay and have a little rivalry here, but yeah. It's all right.
We'll be there next year.
Yeah, we'll see. I do have to go ahead and formally apologize to Alex Smith about all the terrible, terrible things I have said to him about him over the years. My bad, Alex.
It feels a lot better to be on the winning side, doesn't it?
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's get to the Irie Wednesday music. What's on the turntable today?
Well, with the crazy weather we've been having, I figured we should throw a little taste of Hawaii in there. So today's trio is out of Kona, Hawaii. Pepper was first formed in 96, and they were relatively unknown until 2001 when they joined the Vans Warped Tour. Mm-hmm. From there, they went on to record their second album, Kona Town, and that's when people really started recognizing them. So from that second album, here is Pepper with Trade Winds.
All right, let's get to it. And remember, later on tonight, Irie Island Hour with Wiz Khalifa. Stay tuned.
Seems I'm always looking when I hear your name. You've been away, but don't leave this side. See all of your faces you've tried to hide. So I'm sitting here in a train station. Lord knows I step with no hesitation. Oh, I've seen through your lies. Still I'm one to testify. And I say, I'll find a way to let you know. Hold me close when trade winds blow. Chances are you're over me. I'll catch that train eventually. To the questions that you're asking, I only expected everything. Oh, arms of mine are burning as I see those pages turning, and I say, I find a way to let you know. Hold me close when trade winds blow. Chances are you're over me. I'll catch that train eventually. I find a way to let you know. Hold me close when trade winds blow. Chances are you're over me. I'll catch that train eventually. My heavens low, but the song the same. Seems I'm always looking when I hear your name. You've been away, but don't leave this side. Seen all of your faces you've tried to hide. So I'm sitting here in a train station. Lord knows I step with no hesitation. Oh, I seen through your lies. Still I'm one to testify. And I say, I find a way to let you know. Hold me close when trade winds blow. Chances are you're over me. I'll catch that train eventually. I find a way to let you know. Hold me close when trade winds blow. Chances are you're over me. I'll catch that train eventually. Said I'm sorry. Said I'm sorry. I'm a lover. I'm a lover who says he's sorry.
Starfish Designs, makers of the original Gandalf.
I'm Radical Russ, and when I want to relax, I always have my 17-inch long original Gandalf from Starfish Designs nearby. The hand-blown borosilicate glass is strong and easy to clean, and the design is sleek and sophisticated. Starfish Designs are available from Bend, Oregon at a glass retailer near you. For locations, call 541-788-GLASS. That's 541-788-4527.
Normal Show Live. We're as much like Cheech and Chong as ordinary Americans are like the Three Stooges.
Hey, Mo! Here, Mo!
Five of the last seven people to run for president and the last three winners have all smoked pot. Marijuana, the gateway drug to the White House. Tune in to the Normal Network every weekday starting at 6 p.m. Eastern for our primetime lineup. We begin with an hour of daily Toker Tunes, followed by Normal Show Live and Toker Talk Radio, live from Rolla J Studios in Portland, Oregon. Then, you get 2 hours of recorded podcasts from national and international reformers, followed by our late-night live shows at 11 p.m. Eastern. Then the whole six-hour block repeats twice overnight. It's the Normal Network, your source for the best in marijuana media. It's time for Normal Show Live's Cannabis Science with Dr. Mitch Earlywine. Dr. Earlywine is a professor of psychology at the State University of New York in Albany and the author of Understanding Marijuana. Now, here's your dose of cannabis science.
All right, folks, get your questions ready in the chat room. You can private message them to Cannabis Carry, or you can call us at 971-533-7111 if you're listening in the live hour, the 7 o'clock Eastern hour. We're joined by Dr. Mitch Earlywine from SUNY Albany. How you doing, Dr. Mitch?
Having a great day.
All right. As usual, when we start off Cannabis Science, we like to give you the chance to fill us in on the latest scientific news, health, culture, polls, news that we might need to know about cannabis.
Paul Armentano may have mentioned it, but the bottom line is a new study showing that adherence to antiretroviral medicines that's commonly used in the treatment of HIV is not impaired in folks who use cannabis, despite some impairments we see in use of, say, the illegal stimulants. Mm-hmm. And, in fact, when we think about this, we've talked before about how cannabis helps treat nausea, and some of these medications are associated with nausea. So it's just delightful to see that cannabis can, in some ways, help folks who are having treatment for AIDS make sure that they stay on their meds.
Yeah, you know, we've heard that scare story from prohibitionists many times, too, that marijuana will lower your immune system, which always seemed odd to me that we were giving it to AIDS patients then. So in general, when we talk about your immune response and the use of cannabis, is there a detrimental effect?
If you've got a bunch of white blood cells in a Petri dish and crank them with more THC than would kill a rodent, then yeah, what a surprise. You do see some impairment in immune function. But in actual humans, no, this isn't an issue at all.
Hmm. You know, this as far as this study, you know, the association between the use of specific drugs and antiretroviral adherence, they're talking about whether or not your use of cannabis would make you, what, forget to take your shot or your pills or something?
Well, it's curious because it's not only forget, but actually just miss doses for any reason at all. Mm-hmm. And it turs out that that's really not the case. But when you think about folks who are using, you know, opiates like heroin and things like that, I mean, I think they're leading kind of a lifestyle where health may not be a priority. But these folks who are abusing cocaine and some of the other stimulants, I think what happens is they get this crazy sense of narcissistic invulnerability and they miss their meds. And unfortunately, this is really a big deal because those antiretroviral drugs really keep the virus from essentially mutating. And if you miss even a single dose, sometimes it can lead to a mutation of the virus and make a harder time for your medication to really work.
Hmm. All right. We're getting some questions from our chat room. Let's start with one from Canadude who wants to know, if you're making a salve, you know, a topical salve of cannabis for medical purposes, is decarboxylization necessary to make that an effective salve?
It looks like, in fact, it's pretty essential. So it may be as simple as just, you know, getting your oven heated up to about 200 degrees, spraying some cannabis on a cookie sheet, and then putting it in there and turning the oven off, which I know doesn't sound particularly elaborate, but it really does make a big difference, especially for all those transdermal, anything that's going across the skin. It can really make a big deal. And as it turns out, it's great that way for any kind of tincture as well.
Mm. Edibles and such too, right?
Exactly.
So for the folks that don't know, if you're new to the show, decarboxylization is the activation of the THC with just enough heat not to burn it off or anything, but just to kind of unlock its essence in a sense. So it is something that is needed to be done. And you can check out, you know, yellowwannacake.com has a cookbook on it. I'm sure she's got some sort of instructions on decarboxylization, and there's all sorts of stuff on the net about it. So make sure you're doing that, or otherwise you're just wasting your product trying to put it in tinctures or salves without doing that. All right, let's get a question here from Boone Krast, who wants to know, what kind of effects does cannabis have on pregnancy?
As it turns out, this is filled with controversy, as you might imagine. We've seen one study in the United States where folks who did smoke cannabis during pregnancy, when their kids were 10 years old, they were more likely to have ADHD. But unfortunately, they never measured ADHD in the mothers themselves. So I honestly don't know if it's just mothers with ADHD who might have been self-medicating and who were therefore more likely to have kids with ADHD, because we do see a heritable component in that. All the work that's come out of both Costa Rica and in basically the Caribbean countries has suggested there isn't a big impact. But every time I say this, I end up getting really angry emails about how I'm, you know, damaging the unborn and things like that. In truth, obviously any psychoactive substance that could pass the placental barrier could potentially have some kind of negative consequence. But we're not seeing tons of data consistent with that, other than this study in humans where the ADHD seemed to be more likely in the 10-year-olds of the women who had used cannabis during pregnancy. Mm,
okay, and Dr. Evil Hypnosis in our chat room says the effect cannabis has on pregnancy, groovy children. So I don't know if he's an official doctor, though. Let's go back here. All right, another question from the chat room, and you can get your questions in here through our Ustream chat or by dialing in live at 971-533-7111. We're speaking with Dr. Mitch Earlywine, a world-renowned expert on the affairs of cannabis and cannabis smokers. So we'll continue to take your questions here. And if you don't get your question in on this show, you can call next week on Wednesday, or you can email 420research@gmail.com. So we've got one from Little Wonder, who wants to know if cannabis use in any way can help with osteoporosis.
As it turns out, we don't have a ton of data on this. It certainly shouldn't interfere with the absorption of the minerals that are essential for making sure your bones stay strong. And at least in a subset of older people who've talked to me informally, it gets them to eat the food they need to eat. So consuming cheese and milk and things like that, if they feel like they don't have adequate appetite, cannabis can actually help them. But obviously it's not going to help if you're just eating a bunch of donuts.
Right. Okay. Question now, wanting to know, what kind of effect and what do we know about cannabis and folks with Alzheimer's disease? It's become, I know Alzheimer's agitation is a qualifying condition here in Oregon and a couple of the other states. So what do we know about that subject?
At least on the sort of petri dish level, we're seeing that THC and a number of other cannabinoids are strong antioxidants and may, in the long run, prevent some of the neurofibrillary tangles that are common in Alzheimer's-related dementia. That said, I can't say that this is some kind of new prevention technique for Alzheimer's. We're just going to have to wait and see how those data pan out. The sort of disorientation and hostility and oddball behavior that we often see in folks who are later on in the dementia stages has been treated with both Marinol and informally with vaporized cannabis, and does seem to help people kind of mellow out and not behave in these sort of disruptive ways. it's obviously not, you know, the front running in the Midwest or in the South just yet, but I'm delighted that it's included in Oregon.
You know, I'm thinking about this, and you know, a lot of times the answer that we have on this is, well, we just don't have the data. We just don't have the studies. And part of that would be we don't have enough people who have smoked pot long enough to make determinations on this. I'm wondering, you know, now we're getting to the time when the baby boom generation, the summer love generation, is hitting retirement age. Are there any ongoing studies, longitudinal studies, that are tracking these folks? And would we know maybe in 5 to 10 years that, look, this group doesn't have a higher incidence of Alzheimer's, or they do, or they don't? What is there anything ongoing that will tell us this in the future?
Warner Shy at Penn State has been taking IQs on a big cohort of folks every 5 to 10 years, depending on his funding, and has started to experiment with at least asking people about their cannabis use and other drug use. The problem is this is an older cohort, and they're either not particularly drug-involved or a little apprehensive about fessing up to being so. So I'm eager to see how that pans out, cautiously optimistic that I think some aspects of IQ are going to be preserved in folks who've used cannabis in their lives. But we also, oddly enough, see that folks who use cannabis have higher IQs in at least some data sets in the first place. Mm-hmm. So, oddly enough, we may just find out the smart people stay smart.
Yeah, I think it's one of those chicken and the egg questions, and it could be that, you know, if you're a smart person, you make a smarter choice in your choice of recreational substances. That could be it.
Exactly.
Interesting question here from Dr. Evil Hypnosis out there, and I hadn't heard this rumor, but it's an interesting one. Is there any truth to the rumor that Dr. Stephen Hawking, the world-renowned physicist at Cambridge, has been using marijuana to alleviate the effects of his ALS?
I have yet to smoke a joint with him, and that's really all I can say.
We don't know. That's the first I've heard that that rumor. That's interesting. We do know that Carl Sagan, the world-renowned physicist, was a user of cannabis. I, you know, it would be interesting to find out. All right, let's get another question from the chat room here. Wanting to know, and this is from our own Lively Libra, she says, recent PTSD studies, post-traumatic stress disorder studies, showed that cannabis may help adult sufferers. Any thoughts on adolescents with PTSD?
It's curious because obviously the same mechanism should apply, but everybody's so apprehensive about brain development in adolescence that I don't think we're going to see a randomized clinical trial anytime soon. In truth, the concerns about adolescents are not replicating in the ways that we would normally see in other studies of hard drugs and adolescents and brain development. So I don't think those concerns are necessarily justified. That said, as you know, you see on the normal website time and again, we really don't think of this as a drug for kids. And so I'm just not eager to see that get put front and center. The exposure-based treatments for PTSD, I know they are not comfortable, but basically sitting down and talking about, writing about, and re-experiencing the traumatic event in a therapeutic setting after you've conducted some relaxation formally seems to work extremely well when supervised by a therapist. And so I encourage folks to give that a try first rather than just hoping that cannabis will sort of take care of the symptoms on their own. Mm.
We've got some discussion going on in the chat room, a couple of folks asking some medical questions, and one has to do with bone tumors. And I know Irv Rosenfeld, one of the four remaining federal medical marijuana patients, has that congenital exostosis, and it's got a whole bunch of more words in it, but it's kind of a bone tumor situation that he uses cannabis to alleviate the symptoms of. What information do we have for those suffering from bone tumors and the use of cannabis?
It really depends on whether the tumor is interfering with your musculature, and so is it located at certain joints, and does essentially relaxing the muscles around that increase your range of motion? So Irvin, you know, he's my stock guy, like he's a wonderful guy, and he has a disorder where the medical cannabis makes it so that his range of motion is improved given the location and sort of arrangement of the tumors. Unfortunately, bone tumors come in a ridiculous variety, and so it may be appropriate for some and less helpful for others. Obviously, it's an empirical question and something that folks can work out with their physicians.
Yeah, and I wish that we would have more physicians that would look into this and would be more open to it. But, again, it's something that you can help bring up with your physician as well. All sorts of books that can help. Up at the Normal website, we've got Paul Armentano's Emerging Clinical Applications for Cannabis and Cannabinoids. It's updated with the latest studies on what cannabis can and can't help. Dr. Mitch, you've got the – is it the Understand – which is the one that you were talking about going in with your book?
So Understanding Marijuana has a full chapter on those medical uses and is relatively up to date for a whole variety of things. Greg Carter has a new book out called Marijuana 101, Medical Marijuana 101, that actually goes into some new data on some disorders that actually wasn't even available when my book came out. So I would encourage folks to take a look at that one as well.
All right. Final question here. And again, folks, if you didn't get your question in on this segment, you can always email Dr. Mitch at 420research@gmail.com. That's 420research@gmail.com. And just an anonymous question wanting to know about any studies involving cannabis and cerebral palsy.
So it looks like at least four individual case studies have been published suggesting that cannabis does decrease that tremor in cerebral palsy. And for the folks who it works with, it really works. I mean, literally within a few hits, you can see a dramatic decrease in some of the shaking that's associated with that disorder. I've gotten only one email, but I did get one for somebody who said it just didn't work for him. It may be strain dependent. I'm afraid our hands are tied. I wish we could do more research on this, but there's clearly a subset of folks who it's helpful for, and by all means, I think it's worth a try.
All right. Well, Dr. Mitch Erlewine joined us every Wednesday here on Cannabis Science, and thanks so much for being a part of the show.
Looking forward to talking to you next week.
All right. When we come back, a new segment, Anonymous Cop joins us to give his perspective on the drug war. Back after this.
You're listening to Normal Show Live, the voice of the marijuana nation. Cannabinoids and health.
Cannabinoids.
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 Why am I having trouble saying that?
Cannabinoids.
Jeez.
Cannabinoids.
What a gift. Play more, play more if you can. You're looking for the dope weed. Fire it up. Play more, play more if you can. You're looking for the dope weed. Bully boy's a man. Play more, play more if you can. You're looking for the dope weed. Play more, play more. Hit the light up. If you burn blood.
Ever wonder how often to change your bong water? The most effective method for baking pot brownies? The best destinations for a ganja getaway? How to hide herb in your car? Whether to grow your own? How precisely to legalize it? Or how something as wonderful as marijuana ever got to be illegal in the first place? Finally, you can find all these answers and much more in the official High Times Pot Smoker's Handbook, featuring 420 things to do when you're stoned. Since 1974, High Times magazine has covered marijuana in all its aspects and wonders, from cultivation to legalization to the herb's enduring and exalted place in popular culture. Packed with inside information, the official High Times Pot Smoker's Handbook wove all of his collected wisdom together into a single indispensable ganja guide, including an entertaining look at marijuana's history, profiles of herb-friendly travel destinations and festivals, favorite potluck recipes from the High Times staff, smoking skills, advocacy and activism, essential marijuana movies and songs, profiles of famous cannabis strains, comprehensive growing information, celebrity endorsements, and much more. This is truly, finally, the ultimate guide to green living.
No stems, no seeds that you don't need. Acapulco Gold is...
badass weed.
Anonymous Cop.
The story you are about to see is true. The names have been changed to protect the innocent.
Law Enforcement Against Prohibition and Normal Show Live present Anonymous Cop. These are the streets. He carries a badge. He knows firsthand the drug war is a failure.
You're a cop, a flatfoot, a bull, a dick, John Law. You're the fuzz, the heat. You're poison, you're trouble, you're bad news.
This is his story.
As an active duty veteran police officer, I would love to publicly join law enforcement against prohibition and freely speak out against the drug war. However, I am scared, yes, scared, to join LEAP publicly. Although many active duty law enforcers are already speaking out publicly with LEAP and maintaining their careers, more on them later, I believe I would be punished by my department for my advocacy or perhaps even fired. Despite my current silence, I believe a paradigm shift regarding the drug war is quietly occurring in every law enforcement agency in this country, thanks in large part to the efforts of LEAP. This paradigm shift is palpable. I can see it, feel it, and on occasion I hear it slip out from fellow officers and even supervisors once in a blue moon. I firmly believe things are about to change in this country, and when they do, those within law enforcement will be jumping off this drug war rat ship like it was on fire. And the jumpers will proclaim that they knew the drug war was wrong the whole time. But alas, I am not here to judge or point fingers at those wearing badges. I wear one too. I too am riding on that drug war rat ship. Gladly, I will be jumping off that rat ship with everyone else. In the meantime, I can point no fingers, except at myself. For those of us in law enforcement, we are quite sensitive and aware as to the consequences of publicly joining LEAP. For those not in law enforcement, a further explanation is in order. Allow me to describe why active duty cops generally do not speak out publicly regarding the harm from drug prohibition, even when they know it is wrong. Let us begin with the viewpoint of your average person in law enforcement. We are scared that in rocking the boat and speaking out, that one, we will be terminated and lose everything. Two, we will be passed over for promotion, lose the position that we currently hold, or fail to be transferred to more desirable assignments within our agency. And three, fellow officers and supervisors will blacklist us for appearing weak or soft on crime. These are the everyday real-life reasons why I have not gone public and why I believe active duty members of law enforcement usually remain silent about the 800-pound drug war gorilla in the room. There are also underlying psychological and personality reasons that make cops reluctant to speak out. One, ego. Two, ignorance. Three, denial. Four, fear. And five, lack of shame over 1 through 4. I will be the first to assert the primary reason for my silence, and the silence of most cops, is an economic one, the fear of losing my job. But after 40 years of an insane drug war, is economics the only reason cops have generally remained silent? Honestly? Give me a break. This is not just about fear of losing one's job. This is also about the character and spirit of the person wearing the uniform. Ignorance, for many cops listed above, is a self-imposed ignorance of not wanting to know. An additional reason many cops are reluctant to speak out against the drug war is a pervasive mentality that says, we don't make the laws, we just enforce them. After nearly 2 decades of being a cop, I am disturbed by this mentality on a daily basis. I am disturbed that my fellow officers generally disassociate themselves from enforcing bad laws. I have often wondered, at what point cops would voice distaste for politicians creating even more outrageous laws? Is the general silence due to the 40-year drug war political campaign? Has this made these bad laws acceptable in society? Is it because some politicians and newscasters reading teleprompters tell us these bad laws are okay? Of course, there are more and more leading politicians speaking out loudly against the drug war these days, a trend that is likely to continue. Is it because our churches are generally silent on the issue? Is it because your mom lied and my mom also lied about the drug war? The answer, all of the above. So when a young cadet walks in to his or her first day of police academy, all too often the hearts and minds of these future cops are well conditioned for what is to follow. I remember the very first day of my police academy when a veteran cop came strutting in the classroom wearing the gun and badge that we all wanted so badly. I looked around the classroom and everyone, myself included, looked up to this cop with respect and reverence. We all wanted to be this guy. With bravado and feeling, this cop strolled around the classroom and eyeballed each one of us, informing us how to think and act if we wanted to be a cop. We hung on every word. One of the bullet points drilled into us was, we don't make the laws, we just enforce them. No one raised his or her hand to debate this. It was a take-it-or-leave-it statement. We took it. We wanted that badge. Trust me, this exact same mentality is alive and well in virtually every police department in the United States. So what does this have to do with cops, myself included, failing to speak out publicly against the drug war? Because we are trained from day one to detach ourselves from the emotional aspect of the law, to simply enforce the law. In other words, we are not supposed to have an opinion on whether a law is good or bad. We are supposed to be robot drones, albeit with some discretion, and enforce the law whether we like the law or not. It is this mentality that is pervasive among the men and women in law enforcement. It is this mentality that has grown another branch on the tree of silence regarding our failed drug laws. After doing this job for many years, I can tell you that many officers have, at least to some degree, convinced themselves that enforcing bad laws is okay because they themselves did not make these bad laws. Therefore, why would an officer publicly speak out about bad laws for which they have no control? This is the real culture within law enforcement that is nurtured and carefully taught to every class of young men and women cadets. It is time for this mentality to stop. But what about freedom of speech, you ask? Pardon me for a moment while I laugh. One would think that law enforcement officers would have freedom of speech, but officers have been terminated for expressing their views about the failed policy in the war on drugs. Have some law enforcement officials publicly joined LEAP and kept their careers? Yes, and thank God for these exceptions. For example, LEAP speaker Richard Van Wickler has worked in law enforcement for over 20 years, the last 15 as superintendent for the Cheshire County, New Hampshire Department of Corrections. For years, Wickler has spoken out publicly against our failed drug war, yet has maintained his career, even being named Corrections Superintendent of the Year in 2011 by the New Hampshire Association of Counties. Other active-duty members of LEAP have faced resistance. Jonathan Wender, then a police sergeant in Mountlake Terrace, Washington, for example, was fired for his anti-prohibition advocacy. But Wender didn't take it sitting down. He sued, and in January 2009, the department settled, reinstating Wender and giving him back full pay and full benefits. So things are slowly getting better, and I believe will get better thanks to organizations like LEAP. But in general, at the time of this writing, we as public servants will in many cases lose everything by publicly speaking out against this shameful war on people. Hopefully this starts to give you a sense of why many cops who know the drug war needs to end are reluctant to say so in public. In my next post, I'll discuss how I came to find out about LEAP and further elaborate on the reasons I want to speak out, but am reluctant to. I am Anonymous Cop. The law offices of Omar Figueroa would like to remind you to stand up for your rights. Please do not give up your precious liberties. There's nothing wrong with standing up for our constitutional rights, and in fact, it's the only way to honor the Constitution that recognizes our natural rights. Treat law enforcement with respect and respect the Constitution by standing up for your rights. If you are detained or arrested, stand up for your rights by repeating, "I respectfully invoke all my legal and constitutional rights. I do not consent to any search and seizure. I want to remain silent, and I want to speak to my attorney, Omar Figueroa." Omar Figueroa has more than a decade of experience in federal and California courts and graduated from Yale University, Stanford Law School, and Trial Lawyers College. Please contact the law offices of Omar Figueroa at 415-489-0420 or 707-829-0215. Or on the web at www.omarfigueroa.com.
Look, when I was a kid, I inhaled frequently. That was the point.
Remember, Mr. President, you once were just one bust away from me.
That's right, bury the drug criminal. Hey, that's all the time we have for today's show. My thanks to the Anonymous Cop for showing up for today's show. Also, we got Wiz Calico, Ganja John, and Cannabis Carry, and NorCal Perps still hanging out. We're going to take it into Hour 2 with Toker Talk Radio, where you can toke or talk or toke about talk and all of that. Phone number is 971-533-7111. Join us, won't you? For those of you listening on the podcast, thanks for downloading. We'll be back tomorrow with more news and interviews you can use, including Terry Joyce with her guest, Redbeard. Coming up later tonight on the Normal Network, a new edition of Free Weed with Danny Danko and the Libra Lounge featuring our own lively Libra and a live edition of the Ivy Island Hour with Wiz Calico. I'm Radical Russ for Ganja John, Wiz Calico, and Cannabis Carry. Thanks for joining us. And until next time, take care of each other, tokers.
The earth.
This is Normal Show Live, the voice of the Marijuana Nation.